Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
This is Secure Freedom Radio. I'm your guest host for today, Kyle Scheidler, filling in for the great Frank Gaffney on what we think of as your intelligence briefing in the war for the free world. President Trump on a major three-nation tour of Asia this week, and of course it makes perfect sense that we would check in with our Asia duty expert, Gordon Chang, to talk about how that's going. Gordon is the author of The Coming Collapse of China and Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. Gordon, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Kyle.
President Trump, is in Japan right now. He's been there for some time. He had a number of things he needed to accomplish, most of them related to North Korea and the current nuclear showdown. Gordon, how did President Trump do in his time in Japan?
I think the president did very well. The thing about the Japan trip, though, is that it was baked in. This was always going to be a love fest, and it was. The important thing for President Trump was to strengthen the already strong bonds with the Japanese, and he did that perfectly. So this is a good first step to the trip. And also, we got to remember that going to Japan first is an accomplishment in and of itself. Because too often in the past, American presidents, when they started Asia trips, would either skip Japan or they would put it in the tail end, going to China first. Now China is tucked into the middle of the itinerary. It's the third nation on the five-nation tour. And we're going to our allies first, Japan and South Korea. So that by itself is an accomplishment.
And of course, President Trump, something of a showman himself, obviously understands that the significance of making someone wait in the waiting room while you have meetings with your friends first.
Absolutely. That's a great way to put it, Kyle.
So the one thing that does, however, is it does mean that the trip is going to get somewhat more difficult as we go along here. Next up, he's got South Korea. Now, the South Korean Prime Minister Moon is known for being a little bit pro-appeasement when it comes to North Korea and also has a reputation as being pro-China. What does Trump need to do to get the South Koreans in line with what he needs for a tough North Korea policy?
Yeah, this is the most difficult stop on the trip, and in some ways it's the most important because the Chinese are going to take their cue from what happens in Seoul. Last Tuesday, the Chinese and the South Korean foreign ministries issued a joint statement, and in order to get the Chinese to sign on, President Moon Jae-in gave China three secret assurances, which have now become known public and are called the three no's. These are our, they did that without consulting the United States, from all that we can tell. And this certainly is an act of disloyalty. It undermines the alliance. And because of these assurances, and two of them relate to missile defense, it undercuts the ability of the United States to defend South Korea. And so, therefore, it puts our forces in the region at risk. I think President Trump needs to call this out in public, even if it means friction, because this is an important issue that just cannot left for the sake of just trying to maintain the smiling diplomacy. If President Trump can get Moon to publicly renounce the three no's, then the Chinese are going to really be put on the back foot. It makes discussions in Beijing so much easier because this is Chinese troublemaking. So President Trump has a very difficult task in South Korea. And we're not even talking about the important trade issues that are also going to be discussed. But just from this point of the three no's, President Trump has a very big item on his agenda.
Talk to us a little bit about the South Korean trade angle, though, because we know, obviously, foreign trade, very, very important to the Trump agenda. What is he going to be facing as he goes into South Korea on the trade issue?
Yeah, Our merchandise goods deficit with China has ballooned since the U.S.-South Korea Free Trade Agreement became effective in 2012. Although we're selling more services to South Korea, nonetheless, the overall trade deficit also has gotten worse. But it's not so much just the issue of the size of the deficits and the direction. The South Koreans have proven to be quite predatory traders. So, for instance, the horribly misnamed Korea Free Trade Commission just slapped a $912.3 million fine on Qualcomm. And at the same time, they have instituted a forced licensing regime. And they did all of this by denying Qualcomm its procedural guarantees that are contained in the free trade agreement. This is completely outrageous. I'm not here to argue in favor of the merits of the case because these issues are really quite complicated, but it's clear that Qualcomm got a very rough deal from the South Korean bureaucracy, and this, I believe, also needs to be reversed, and President Trump should be talking about this issue. And I know that Trump has threatened to terminate the free trade agreement. I think that's going a little bit far, especially with an ally and a crucial ally. But nonetheless, at this point, there are these issues which I believe cannot and should not be ignored at this time.
Well, when you talk about the need to raise a little friction, that certainly seems like it'll also be in President Trump's wheelhouse. So maybe he will be in a good position to do that here in South Korea.
Well, I certainly hope so, because things are not going to get too much easier in Beijing. But, you know, if President Trump is able to assert American interests effectively, the Chinese, I think, are going to sort of look up and say, my gosh, we have underestimated Trump. We got to do what he says. So this is important. So this could have good knock-on effects for the rest of the trip.
Now, talk to us about the Chinese position. They're coming off a major party Congress. How did that go, and how will it affect the future of Trump-China relations?
Well, Xi Jinping, the Chinese ruler, has consolidated his position after the 19th Communist Party Congress, which occurred in the middle of last month. In one way, that does affect the North Korea issue, because Trump can look at Xi Jinping and say, look, you know, you've now powerful as everything. You know, you almost have absolute power, it looks like. That means you no longer have any excuses to foot drag on North Korea. You can't blame anybody else. And I hope that President Trump makes that point in private, if not in public, because I think that we do have these issues, of course, with China. That, you know, the Chinese are always going to support the North Koreans unless the United States applies pressure to China. So, you know, we know the Chinese are villains. We know the North Koreans are villains. But the question is, we sometimes permit them to be villains. The Chinese will get away with as much as they can. It's up to President Trump to make sure they can't get away with anything.
Well, it sounds like then a lot hinges on the South Korea leg of this trip as we go into Beijing. Do you have any sort of predictions on where there will be friction or any traps that Trump should be careful to avoid?
In South Korea, almost everything is going to be a trap because, as you point out, Moon Jae-in is the most pro-North Korean, pro-China president of South Korea, with the possible exception of his former boss, which was President Roh Moo-hyun, who governed last decade. Moon Jae-in, if he were up to him, would do everything possible to undermine American security and his own security, I believe. So it really is up to Trump to use effective diplomacy on Moon. We got to remember that South Korea is a badly divided country. Half of it is so-called conservative. Half of it is so-called progressive. Progressive really means, you know, President Moon's way of thinking. And so Moon can't do all the things that he wants because of the other half of the electorate. And I think President Trump has to go in there, solidify America's position with the conservative portion of South Korea, and use that against President Moon. Up to now, Trump's diplomacy with Moon, which has really been quite coercive, has actually been quite effective. It's prevented Moon from doing what he wanted to do, and so the president should get credit for that. But this is not something where he can declare a final victory, because Moon will always be trying to do something to undermine the U.S., as he did last Tuesday with that joint statement with the Chinese. So it's going to be a constant struggle, and we're going to see it played out this week.
All right, Gordon, just a few seconds left. The wild card here, of course, North Korea. Are they going to stay quiet, or should we expect them to raise their voice?
I expect the North Koreans to do something provocative, like fire a missile. There are reports that the North Koreans have been moving their mobile missiles around, which is an indication that they're going to be a launch soon. So I think it could very well be during the South Korea portion of this trip, but in any event, it will occur soon.
All right, Gordon, thank you very much for joining us on Secure Freedom Radio. Coming up next, we'll be talking to Benjamin Weingarten about free speech on the Internet.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.